Read with me, if you will, the story of Lazarus from John 11, verses 1 through 15. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary, and his sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him."
I appreciate that scripture reading. There are some stories where, for lack of a better term, Jesus seems a little weird. A little, maybe a better word is counterintuitive weird. A good weird. But what he's doing kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit. There are several head-scratching things and several questions that this text that John 11 leads to. So there's this family in Bethany, a town near Jerusalem, and Jesus is really tight with this family, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They're brothers and sisters. He's really close with them, I love that. I love this, like, he's got this cool family that he's close with the siblings. I love family. I think of the Lees. Jeremy and Jonathan and Rachel, you got these like family, it's like a clan, they all stick together and you know them all well and they're all cool in unique ways. That's what I think this family is like, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Mary's the one who washed Jesus' feet. Martha, in this story, she makes the highest confession of who Jesus is in all of John. Martha makes the great confession, and we'll see that in the text this morning. Lazarus is referred to as the one he loves. So he gets this message that the one you love is sick. And just a side note for any like theology nerds, who's the disciple whom Jesus loves? John, right? All right, side theory. Legitimate side theory that a lot of scholars actually do believe is that Lazarus is actually the same guy. And here you see him call him that. And after this, the rest of the time, this is when the disciple whom Jesus loved shows up. Look at John 21. If you're interested, look at John 21, and something there you're gonna think, oh, this could be Lazarus. So that's again, some of you who are gonna actually read John 11, if you're really curious about this, go read John 21 too. And think, could it be that Lazarus is the disciple whom Jesus loved? But anyway, he gets this news that the one you love is sick. And that's bad. That's never a good thing to hear. Painful words. You know it's serious. We hate seeing our loved ones suffer. It's got to be a bad illness. It feels like one of those ones where the word you get when the person's probably not going to make it. right? The word, when it's time to bring in the family, and your stomach drops, and you're filled with dread. This is a hard moment. Jesus has received very bad news. Probably a lot of us have been there in that moment. And when that happens, you clear your calendar, you cancel plans, you get in the car and you go. And it's a hard, anxiety-filled journey that doesn't even feel real. Jesus is in a town when he gets this news about 15 to 20 miles away from this sweet family that he's friends with. And it's probably when he gets this news, he should go. He should hoof it and go. But instead, when he gets this news that the one you love is sick, when most people would hop in the car and get over there, he waits 2 days. Doesn't head straight there. Why would he do that? Let's go. Leave now. Maybe you could save him. Jesus, go. Why are you hanging out for 2 days doing nothing? This just doesn't make sense. But if you do the math, Jesus is going to show up in Bethany. And once he gets there, he's been dead. Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. And so if you do the math, it's very likely that actually by the time Jesus received this news, that Lazarus has already died. Most likely. Lazarus is dead by the time Jesus even hears the news. But theoretically, he didn't know that, right? So why the delay? Why would you sit around for 2 days? I think that's a question I've asked God. Why the delay, God? Where are you? Please do something. Can you not see that I'm suffering? Can you not see what's happening here? Can you not, do you not care? No, sometimes, not always, but sometimes I've cried out to God and it feels like he's just sitting around for 2 days like Jesus did. It feels like he's just sitting there and twiddling his thumbs. And I have wondered, God, do you care? I wonder if I was loved. I wonder, does he not have the power to do something here? Is he even there? And maybe they were kind of thinking the same thing. Hey, don't you care about Lazarus? We just said the one you love is sick. Why are we here for 2 days? I thought you loved him. And maybe that's why the text makes this point, is that it's actually important to know that even though he waited 2 days, he does love him. That is the truth. Even though he's waiting, he still loves him. And he loves this family. But he's still making him wait, even though he loves him. He can love you. God can love you and not just jump to your aid every time you call. He can love you and still allow some suffering. He can love you and he can make you wait. Just like we as parents can do that, right? We can love our kids and not jump to their aid every time because we know that that actually sometimes isn't good for them. They need to learn to problem solve. We can love them and allow some suffering, let them face the consequences of their own poor decisions. We can love them and make them wait because it's important to learn to wait. So it doesn't mean you don't love them. And so look what Jesus says. He says, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going to go there and awaken him. And a theme in all of these different encounters is Jesus speaking figuratively and then people taking him too literally. And this is probably the one that is the most comedic, and I heard some chuckles there because it is funny. Because when he says that, they're like, no, Jesus, don't go wake him up. Don't go wake him up. He's gonna get well. When they're sick, they're getting better. That would be obnoxious to go and wake him. Nobody likes being woken up. Don't do that. But then he kind of makes it more. He's gonna make it more plainly known. But a lot of times when the Bible speaks of death, they speak of it as sleeping. Because death is not final. There is going to be a new consciousness. A new awakening, a new life. So the Bible speaks of death as sleeping, but because it's saying death is not final. death is not, it is not the end. And so Jesus just tells them plainly, verse 14, Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I'm glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let's go to him. So he's saying, hey, I'm glad I wasn't there so that you will believe. That's what this delay was about. That's what the two-day wait was about. What he is about to do is going to make them believe, or maybe believe more. I think there's levels of belief, right? Like the guy, remember this guy in Mark? He says to Jesus, I believe, but help me in my unbelief. I think we've all kind of been there, right? We have these levels of belief, but there's still some doubt. And those things can exist at the same time. I think that's important to note. And so maybe their belief is about to level up. They're about to see a new layer of how good and powerful Jesus is, and a new layer of how good and powerful God is. They're about to move from Jesus is so powerful that he can heal sick to Jesus is he's so powerful he can raise the dead. They're going to see something new. They're going to learn something new about him. So that's what this delay was about. It was an opportunity to show he is master over life and death. So here, as we think about this frustration of waiting on God when we're suffering and we're wondering, why, God, are you not helping? Why, God, are you allowing this to happen? God, I know you have the power. I know you can fix this, but why aren't you? Is maybe the longer the delay, the bigger the miracle. That's what's happening here. The longer the delay, the bigger the miracle. Maybe that's not always a hard and fast rule, but I do like to think that the longer the suffering or the deeper the hole of your life, the more God is going to show his power, the more redemption, the more he will eventually flex his muscles and show who he is and show what he can do. And those moments where you think I am trapped and I am stuck and there is no way out, God can still provide hope. God can still, in those moments where this is it, this is the end, this is done, this is death, even then God can be the answer. God has power to fix that. So he goes and he has this encounter with Martha, which may actually be the hinge point in the text here. This is in verse 23. Martha. Jesus said to her, He shows up in Bethany. Lazarus is dead. He's been dead for 4 days. And he goes up to Martha at verse 23. He says, your brother will rise again. And again, here comes a little bit of the misunderstanding. Martha said, yeah, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection in the last day. Martha thinks Jesus is making her feel better, right? Like whenever someone dies, you're like, oh, it's okay. They're going to heaven. Okay, that's it. It's fine. They're going to heaven. Stop crying. She thinks that's what he's alluding to. You know, don't worry. One day it's going to be better. But Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. This sounds kind of like John 3:16. Do you believe this? Do you believe this, Martha? Verse 27, she said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into this world. That's the great confession. That is the highest confession made about who Jesus is in the Gospel of John. Martha makes it right here. The highest level of faith, the highest level of understanding of who Jesus really is. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God, the one coming into this world. Of everybody in all of John, Martha seems to be the one who gets it the most. She really seems to believe in his power. But that confession, right, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world, sounds like Peter's confession, right? And we focus more on Peter's confession. Remember what he says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Very similar. When Peter says that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, Jesus' response is, on that confession, I will build this. On that confession, I will build my church. That is the starting place, is confessing who Jesus really is. Earlier, Martha says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But in verse 22, Martha is the only one. She's the only one who says this. Everybody else thinks it's completely over. He's dead. This is where Jesus' power ends. But Martha says, this is verse 22. Even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask for. Martha is the only one who seems to think Lazarus is dead and he's been dead for 4 days. But maybe this story isn't over. Maybe something can still be fixed here. Maybe something can still be new here. And I think that she knew that because of that confession she made. She actually knows who Jesus is. So, skipping a lot of cool parts of the story, you'll have to read it later. He ends up going to the grave. And everyone's there at the grave crying. And it is a sad scene. People feel defeated. Maybe even more sad. I mean, probably really frustrated. Lazarus is dead, and now Jesus shows up. Oh, if only it would have been here earlier. Oh, you were so close. This has got to be so frustrating. He just showed up too late. God was late. That's how they feel. Then, the easiest verse to memorize in all the Bible, John 11:35, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. And I think we see this and we always wonder, everybody always asks, why did he weep? What was really going on here? I think it's so important that we see this, that we saw him do this. Because a lot of people are like, well, if he's going to raise Lazarus, why is he crying? He's about to be raised. Don't cry. What's the big deal? Maybe Jesus was caught up in the intensity of the moment. You ever watched a loved one grieve? You ever seen that? You ever watch your parent mourn their parent? It's not easy. It's painful. It's sad. It's tough. He's in a moment of like extreme pain and brokenness. Maybe he needed to feel that grief and feel that loss. Maybe there's some symbolism in the idea that even though we know people will live again, even though we know there's a heaven, even though we know there will be probably some form of reunification, it is okay to be sad when people pass. It is okay to be sad when we lose people. Yes, there will be reunification, but yes, it's sad that they're not on earth anymore. It's sad that they're going to miss out on the things that we wanted them to be a part of. It's okay to be sad when people go to heaven because we will miss them. It's not going to change that. But maybe we also needed to see Jesus. We needed to see God come into this broken world at least one time. We needed to see him come in here, and when he looks at death, when he looks at sin, when he looks at brokenness and sickness and conflict and war and violence and selfishness and all the pain and misery that comes with that, that he sees our suffering. He sees the things we are hurting and we are dealing with and the loss that we struggle with. And that he weeps. Somewhere we need to know that Jesus weeps over the brokenness in this world. He doesn't like it. He doesn't want it. And maybe we need to see that sometimes weeping over brokenness in this world is very appropriate and very okay. Even if we know on the other side there's hope and things are going to get better, it's okay to feel it in that moment. And even the people in the story, if you read it, they're kind of wondering, is it because he loved him? He loved him so much. That's why he's crying. Oh, if only he was here. They're kind of wondering, well, okay, what? I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be weeping here, but what is it? And maybe some people will tell you it's because of a lack of faith. And they do kind of say, well, he wasn't here, he couldn't save him. Most of them think he can't do anything anymore, that this is the limit. Other than Martha, most people think this is the limit of Jesus' power. He can't fix death. And there's definitely a theme of lack of faith in Jesus' ministry, right? People not believing in him, people questioning him, saying, hey, it's from Beelzebub that he's doing these miracles. Challenging him as a teacher. People in his own town didn't believe in him. His family was embarrassed by him. And there's a theme in John, as we've been looking at these texts, there's always some people who believe and some people who kind of reject him. And here he's with his close friends, beloved friends, and his disciples nearing the end of his ministry. They've seen a lot. And even those people don't get it. They don't believe in his power over death. They still think he's limited. That death is where Jesus' power ends. So maybe it's a lack of faith that he's weeping over. But just imagine with me and wonder with me for a moment. It's hard to think about how God, I mean, it's hard to grasp God. It's hard to think about what his emotional state would be. But maybe he's weeping over a lack of faith, but maybe underneath that is he's weeping because he's not understood. People still don't get who he is. That probably feels kind of frustrating. These people still don't understand that I'm God. They don't understand my connection here. Most of them still just don't get it. They know he's from God. They know he's a wonderful teacher. They know he's a powerful healer, but he's limited. They still haven't grasped how far his reach goes. They don't totally get it. And I mean, you see that all over the New Testament. I mean, a theme of the New Testament is saying, hey, you think God is this big, but we're saying he's this big. You think God has these limits, and he keeps showing, nope, I'm bigger than you think. Some didn't get that his love reaches anyone, no matter their race or no matter their sin. Think the Samaritan woman. Some people thought, nope, God's not for those people. And he said, nope, race doesn't matter, sin doesn't matter, gender doesn't matter. Some didn't even get that the rules of which he operates under are not bound by Old Testament law. Something we completely skipped last week that you guys saw when you read John 9 is that he healed that man on the Sabbath. And a lot of people had an issue with that. Why would you do this on the Sabbath? Aren't you bound by these laws? And nope, God's bigger than that. And most of these people that he's with, they figured out those things. They figured out God's reach for people is a lot bigger. They figured out that he's not bound by these old laws. But even they don't grasp that he is the resurrection and the life, that he is everything. They can't comprehend it, and neither can we fully. And Christ lives all the fullness of God in bodily form. Martha may have got it, but most of them didn't, not completely. God came here to be known. I think that's, God came here to save, yes, but he came here to be known. And this might have been the human part of him realizing, they're just never totally going to get me. I want to be known, and they are still just going to scratch the surface of who and what I really am. I think that's actually fair. We're never going to fully grasp God. He's too big for us to wrap our minds around. And maybe that was the moment where he's realizing that. I'm never going to be fully known. Maybe for a moment it felt lonely. Or maybe not. Maybe you shouldn't write this down and take it as fact. I'm exploring what might have been going on here. But it is very frustrating to be misunderstood. Have you ever felt that? You ever felt like people just don't get you? That feels lonely. People think that you are someone different or someone worse than you are. Or like, this is kind of like if one of you were like, hey, I got you a Taylor Swift CD because I know you're really into Taylor Swift. That would almost hurt my feelings. Like, you don't know me at all, man. I love music, and I mean, she's okay, but you're a little off base here. You don't know me. We don't like not being known. We don't like when people don't get you or are wrong about you. As a minister, this one happens to me a lot. Like, I say one thing and people kind of hear another, and some of that's on me, but it hurts to be like, oh, you thought that's what I was saying? Oh, you thought that's what I was doing? Or like when people maybe assume wrong motives about us, you know, that's tough. But I think we all really want to be known. And God wants to be known. And that's one of the reasons he came to earth, to show us who he is and to show us how to live. And it's possible that part of this was a moment of weeping, realizing I'm incomprehensible and they don't get it. But then he gets up and he goes to the tomb. He says, open it up. And they're like, no, that's gross. He's gonna stink. No. And then verse 40, Jesus said to her, this Martha, did I not tell you that if you believe, you would see the glory of God? So then they're like, okay. They take away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I've said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me. So this miracle of resurrecting Lazarus, it's about belief. It's about evidence. It's about proof of his power and who he is. And so he says, Lazarus, Lazarus, come out. Lazarus, come out. And there he is. He comes out. Seems like the pinnacle of all his miracles. He has power over life and death. Shocking. He's actually so powerful. St. Augustine said he made a joke about it. He's at a graveyard. There's all kinds of dead bodies, different levels of decay. He says, Lazarus, get up. Because our God is so mighty and he's so powerful, that if he just said, get up, they'd all be getting up. It'd be like Thriller. So he had to say Lazarus. And it would be also awkward to be like, no, not you guys. Go back later. Then after this, a bunch of people believe. And again, you're going to have to go read this story because it is cool. There's some really cool irony here. There's some neat things happening. Then a bunch of people believe this is big. This is undeniable. He was dead for 4 days. Oh, and the four-day thing. He waited 4 days because in some Jewish tradition, they believe that the soul lingers around the body for 3 days. Just in case you get to return. So maybe those 2 days of him waiting was to show, no, he's that dead. He's that gone. And this is how powerful I am. This is how powerful God is. And so a bunch of people believe. It's pretty undeniable what's happened. But you're going to see this scene of these religious leaders, and they pretty much know the truth now. But they think, look, Rome is going to see this. Rome is going to see that there's this charismatic leader doing these powerful things. People are going to follow him, and Rome's going to come in here and destroy us. Rome's going to wipe us out if this guy keeps doing what he's doing. He has to be stopped. Specifically, they are afraid for their nation and for the temple. If this guy keeps doing this, Rome's going to destroy the nation and the temple. And so they're like, he's got to die and Lazarus has to die. So some people believe, some people accept the truth. And some of these religious leaders, they believe the truth. They're like, this guy's from God and it's undeniable, but we don't want to lose our precious religious tradition and we don't want to lose our precious country. He's got to be stopped. They want to stop the truth. They want to end it. And I get it. Man, I love my faith traditions and I love my country. And it would be sad if God came here and he's like, hey, get rid of Westgate. This ain't going to work. You don't need this. You don't need any of this America stuff like that. That would be really sad. I'm like, no, I love these things. But God is doing something bigger. He doesn't need one country or one holy location like the temple. Again, think back to his discussion with the Samaritan woman. It's not just about one ethnicity. It's not about one country, and it's not about one location. He is doing something much bigger. And these guys don't want to get on board, so they want to kill him and Lazarus. They don't get him, and they don't get it. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life, and this story shows us that. There is no hole too deep that he can't pull you out of. No amount of sin you have, you can't go too far. That's what there's no point that you can go to where God can't save. No suffering so horrible that he can't redeem. No situation outside of his grace and of his power. This morning, if you want to tap into that resurrection power in your life, if you need saving only God's limitless power can give, if you need life, we invite you to come now as together we stand and sing.